Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. John Duke Anthony, thank you for the good work you've been doing since before I was born, but particularly since I came to this country 5 years and a half ago. And this is just yet an additional achievement. I congratulate you on this. And also, I want to express my gratitude to Ambassador Graham. I always had these doubts. His name really has an Arabic tone to it. He has assured me that he is from Georgia, but I plead with you, check your history, your family history, please. Probably there is one good thing in your family about, you know, back in the ancient histories and times. I just arrived 10 minutes ago to this hall, and I was particularly delighted to discover that His Royal Highness Prince Turki is among us. I am so happy to meet you again, Prince Turki, and you know that I'm very... I'm personally sincere in telling you, I hope you will not quote me on this, you are my favorite royal ever. Of all nationalities, of all royal dynasties. I know, please don't quote me. I was supposed to be talking about different issues, more on a positive tone, but what has happened in Syria last week will force me to retell the story that I was planning to tell originally. But before I explain to you what happened in Syria last week, I need to go a little bit back, just a little bit, only to last September in New York. Let me tell you what has happened last September in New York. Then probably you can answer the questions that I am going to ask you, because I don't have answers to them. To be candid and honest with you, we in Syria, we have resigned ourselves to the fact that there will never be a diplomatic or a political re-engagement between Syria and the United States of America as long as this administration continues to be in power. And we started working very hard with all congressional leaders, congressmen and senators from both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans, to outreach to them and to tell them, look, Syria is not an enemy to the United States. It does not serve the national interest of Syria, nor the national interest of the United States itself, to portray us as enemies to the United States despite our willingness to engage with the United States. And in a way, I think this message, which is a very moderate message, has been widely accepted by the rationale center here in the United States, not only in the Congress, but also among the media, among the universities, academia, and the political think tanks. The general trend across the United States today, of course I'm talking about the rationale center, is that the United States needs to engage with Syria. And of course, this is our position. So as you all know, it takes two to tango, and you would ask yourselves, then when will the tango dance start between the Syrians and the Americans? Well, there is one single major exception, which is an administration that has isolated in itself in a bubble, refusing to talk to Syria, refusing to engage diplomatically in Syria, because for simple reason, we are a rogue state. The good administration of the United States of America does not talk to rogue states. Fair enough. So we have resigned ourselves to this fact. But meanwhile, we have major regional problems and crises in our region. So we started working on these major issues from our region with various allies and friends. A couple of months ago, two senators, one Democrat, one Republican, published an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal saying that, in which they wrote, I think you know who am I referring to, they wrote, major positive developments are taking place in the Middle East right now. Egypt has brokered a peace agreement, a truce, a ceasefire agreement between Hamas and Israel. Germany has brokered a prisoners' exchange agreement between Hezbollah and Israel. Syria, Qatar, and France have helped the Lebanese to reach a national reconciliation, elect a new president, and end up with a national unity government. And Turkey is helping Syria and Israel start indirect negotiations right now. While these major developments are happening in the Middle East, our country, of course, I'm talking about the two senators, our country is on the sidelines watching. And then they concluded by saying, while we were attempting to isolate Syria, we ended up isolating the United States of America from the major developments in that region. I will jump now to September. Last month, we were attending the United Nations General Assembly meetings in New York, and suddenly, out of the blue, we received a message from Secretary Rice requesting a meeting with our foreign minister. To be honest with you, I promise to be candid, we were pleasantly surprised. The meeting took place. It was not a hostile meeting. She was not pointing fingers. Actually, she was commending the positive good things that were happening in our region, mainly the positive developments vis-a-vis Iraq, Lebanon, and the indirect talks with Israel. That was a short meeting, followed up 2 days later by a lengthy meeting with the Assistant Secretary of State in charge of the Near Eastern region. And in this very long meeting, almost every issue was discussed in depth, and I assure you, regardless of anything else you might hear, because we have the proof to this, we have taped this meeting, that the tone was extraordinarily, puzzlingly positive as far as we are concerned. Of course, why were we puzzled? Because for the past 4 years, time and again, we tried to tell the United States, stop this belligerent attitude towards us. If you have issues with Syria, of course we also have issues with the United States. We are extremely unhappy with the death and destruction you have bestowed on Iraq while bringing them democracy and prosperity. We are extremely unhappy of the fact that when Israel was bombarding Lebanon in 2006, destroying two-thirds of its infrastructure, killing 1,300 civilians and leaving 1 million cluster bomblets to continue the killing process after Israel left, while the whole world were demanding that Israel agree to a ceasefire, the United States of America, singularly, uniquely across the whole world, was opposing such a ceasefire because it cared, you know, a lot for Lebanon. And of course, we are extremely, extremely unhappy in Syria about the fact that for the past 60 years, the Palestinian nation has suffered tremendously, despair, humiliation, dire conditions, thanks to the humane, liberal, renaissance-like Israeli occupation of their territories and the flagrant, blind, biased support the United States of America provides to the Israeli occupation of our territories. Having said this, we also understand that the United States has issues with Syria. Our message to the United States was, always, whenever we had a problem in the past, we were able to sit together and to address these issues, find a common ground, work to narrow the gaps between us and you, find solutions, compartmentalize. Some problems can easily be addressed. Other problems need hard work, need vision, need diligence. But we failed, even with President Reagan. Let me tell you this. In the past, Syria did have a crisis with President Reagan. And the New Jersey air carrier bombarded our troops in Lebanon. What happened? Did President Reagan withdraw the U.S. ambassador from Damascus? Did he boycott Syria and say, Syria is a rogue state, we don't talk to rogue states? No. Actually, not only did he leave the ambassador in Damascus, but he sent a special envoy to Damascus, Philip Habib, so that the United States, realizing it had a crisis with a country, would work with this country more intensively than with any other country in the world. I'm talking about President Reagan. I'm not talking about President Carter or President Clinton or one of the most admired U.S. presidents in our part of the world, President Bush, the former, the father. Back to September, we were, as I told you, we were pleased, we were surprised. For 4 years, we were telling the United States, sit with us, let us address the issues. They wouldn't. Suddenly, by the very end of the second term of this administration, they decided to sit with us, and they engaged with us on every single issue, and the discussions were on a practical level, and they were mostly encouraging, particularly regarding Iraq, particularly. Actually, they asked us, they congratulated us for sending a Syrian ambassador to Baghdad, which was the first Syrian ambassador we sent to Iraq for the past 27 years. the first Syrian ambassador. And then they asked us, why don't you send higher level delegates to Iraq? The Iraqi government needs this show of support, Arab leaders visiting Iraq. And we told them, simply, our prime minister was planning to visit Iraq, but the Iraqi government that invited him originally told us that the U.S. opposed this visit, and they can't go ahead with a visit. The president of Iraq, the prime minister of Iraq, cannot actually invite the prime minister of Syria to Baghdad without the approval of the United States of America. And when we told them this in New York, they said, well, things have changed. Go ahead. Let your prime minister visit Baghdad. We will provide him with full security and full protection. And we will be very happy that he will visit Baghdad. That was only last September. And of course, they particularly were pleased about the intelligence, security, cooperation between the Syrian government and the Iraqi government on security-related issues. By the way, we were not doing this to please the United States of America. We were doing this because we believe that this is the interest of our region. This serves the interest of our region. It's not about doing things so that the people in Washington, D.C. will be pleased. If that was the policy of Syria in the first place, we would have been in a very different position by now. Our policies stem from our perceptions, our convictions about what is best for our region. We might be right, we might be wrong, but at least these are our perceptions. And we are in no position at all to come to the United States and tell America, as an example, what is best suited for your region, for North America, as an example. This is your region. That's our region. We happen to belong there. And we are, as you know, caught between the hammer and the hard place, the Israeli occupation of Palestine, the American occupation of Iraq. Occupations usually generate and spawn lots of evils. And it's a vicious circle of violence and counter-violence, death, bloodshed, destruction, and usually it fuels extremism on both sides, the occupier and the occupied. This is why we have always opposed the U.S. invasion and occupation of Iraq and, of course, the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian territories and of the other Arab territories, the Syrian Golan and the Lebanese Shabab Farms and Ghajar Village. Back to the major developments that took place, at least our understanding after September last month was that the United States was seriously engaged in reevaluating, reassessing its policies towards Syria, and probably a new phase of bilateral relations between Syria and the United States would start. And then I have only 10 minutes left. Okay, thank you. I will be as succinct as possible. I will leave some time, ample room for the questions. Okay. Last week, you know exactly what has happened. 4 U.S. helicopters went into Syria to a village called As-Sukkariyeh near Al-Bukamal. Villagers living there, a group of them building a residential house, a small residential house, like villagers usually do in that part of the world, in our country. 2 helicopters started shooting and firing on those people, civilians, villagers, Syrians, all of them. Not a single person of them had even a knife to defend himself. They were never involved in any organization, or even probably, with due respect to them, they have passed away now, probably they didn't really understand the whole context of the U.S. enterprise in Iraq about liberating, bringing freedom and democracy, prosperity and all the rosy pictures to Iraq. They don't know anything. Of course, probably they know that there are U.S. troops in Iraq, and they know that there is death and bloodshed in Iraq. They know that there are 1.5 million Iraqi refugees today in Syria fleeing that haven of democracy and prosperity into our rogue state. But this is irrelevant. They killed all these guys, and then 2 other helicopters went down, and the soldiers from those helicopters moved around the bodies, being sure that each single person was killed and shooting additional bullets into the bodies. It was a criminal terrorist attack against unarmed, innocent civilians. One father and four of his sons died. Another couple, a husband and wife, died. And an eighth man, a fisherman, died. Totally, totally unjustified. But the big question, why did it happen? Why the sudden change? We don't know in Syria. Probably the guys here don't talk to each other and they have different attitudes. Some people within the administration believe that it's time to re-engage with Syria, while others say, look, this is an election time. We need to do something to remind the people that we have crisis in Iraq and we are fighting against Al-Qaeda. Let's do something, you know, Rambo style, so that we can steer emotions and ideas within the hearts and minds of the American people so that they might reconsider their elections positions. Well, thank you very much. If you care for your elections, that's your right. But don't come and kill Syrian innocent civilians in order to manipulate the domestic elections here in the United States. I will stop here. Jean Duke is already upset with me. And I think we can further discuss this at a later stage. Thank you very much.